Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Human Design on Air. I'm your host, Peter Rowe, from loveyourhumandesign.com. And today we are going to talk about another incarnation cross, the incarnation cross of the Maya. And to help me do that, I'd like to introduce my co-host, the Reverend Rick of revrick.webs.com. That's Rick, R-I-C. Reverend Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Peter. Pleasure to be here. And I'm looking forward to our discussion today. This is a neat topic. I'm glad you thought of this.
It is, and I think going around the crosses, in a way, as we go through the crosses, it's really going to bring out a lot of the things that we see in society. And next week, I was just looking up what the energy next week is, and the cross we're going to discuss next week is the cross of laws. So there'll be a new sheriff in town.
And potentially a new sheriff in town.
A new sheriff. But, you know, as we go through these crosses, it really does bring up, I don't know, dilemmas is not the right word, but, you know, it brings up the stuff that makes us human and the things that we face. And today we're talking about the cross of the Maya, which is why, you know, it's that burning question why, that desire to want to know. The song, when I was writing my blog post today, the song that kept coming into my mind is that, I looked it up, it was, I guess, originally sung by Skeeter Davis, I believe her name was, in the 60s, but it's called The End of the World, and it starts out, "Why do the birds go on singing? Why don't they just up and die?" And it's, you know, of course, the song is about a lost love, but there's this element in the song questioning. It's just this constant questioning, you know, how can the universe go on, if I've lost my love? And it just sort of seemed to resonate with the cross of the Maya.
It actually does, Peter. Especially when as we get into the discussion and we start talking about the different elements of this particular cross, that's a very good representation. That's a very good, I guess, artistic representation of these energies. That's pretty cool that came to mind.
So, well, I looked up the singer, but she didn't write it, She wasn't the cross of the Maya, but I'd be curious to go back, and it was written by two people, which I don't recognize in either of the names. It'd be interesting to go back and see if either one of them was, you know, the cross of the Maya or had some of the gate influences that we'll discuss on the show today.
Or maybe in combination.
Yeah, exactly. I did write a blog post today, and if you go out to loveyourhumandesign.com and click on the right-hand side on Peter's blog, and then click on the article titled Incarnation Cross of the Maya, we are going to be looking at some charts today. And Reverend Rick, I don't know did you have time to see who's featured in today's blog post as the Cross of the Maya?
I did. One of my favorite characters. We have our former ex-president from way, way back when, Thomas Jefferson.
And
he has an interesting chart, I got to tell you.
he does have an interesting chart, and you know, it was interesting to me, as I cited in the blog post, several years ago I read the book Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose, and it's all about the adventures of Lewis and Clark, and really interesting book, really crammed with details. I think it's a 500 to 600 page book, if I remember correctly. It's pretty thick.
Wow.
But it's just loaded with stories and details of Lewis and Clark's adventure. And, you know, and one of the things that struck me right away as I was looking at the Cross of the Maya, the four gates that we're going to be really getting into, and, you know, and having read that book, was that Thomas Jefferson instructed Lewis to basically document everything. He took along a journal. In fact, actually, I believe that his journal is in the Library of Congress, or one of the maybe the Smithsonian, I'm not sure. But it's full of, he especially wanted him to document the flora and the fauna. And so it's full of plant drawings, bird drawings. I believe he brought back a whole bunch of samples of different plants, and I'm not sure if he brought back any animals, but just all sorts of documentation of stuff up until that point that was unknown, because it, at least unknown to the white man in Western civilization, certainly probably known to the native cultures. But, you know, it's just that whole exercise is steeped in the Cross of the Maya. It's like, you know, what's out there? You know, what can we learn about it to understand it? How, you know, we need to name it. I believe, I don't remember correctly, but I believe there's a whole bunch of species of plants and birds that were essentially named by Lewis, because that's what he gave to them at, you know, as he discovered them, and you know, and that's one of the gates that we'll be talking about today.
Fascinating stuff. You know, I've never really enjoyed studying history, but if I could go back and study it through the lens of human design, I might actually find it quite interesting now.
It is, and it you know, I have to say that Stephen Ambrose is a you know, it, there's parts that the book bogs down a little bit, but he's a great storyteller, and he based this off of Lewis's journal and then subsequent other journals of people that were on that trip. But anyway, so let's talk about the Cross of the Maya. Again, for those that are joining us that maybe haven't listened to one of our shows talking about Incarnation Cross, the Incarnation Cross is made up of the four lead energies, the four gates that come from the sun and the earth. So essentially two gates that come from the sun and two gates that come from the earth in your human design. And because those are your lead energies, because those are, you know, the Earth and the Sun are really our two most important planets in terms of human life, that energy carries a big impact in your design. And, you know, I really see it as, from a spiritual standpoint, I really see the Incarnation Cross is a gift, an asset that you are born into to help carry out your mission or your life's lessons, whatever those might be. That they're, it's not the only thing, but it's a cornerstone to help you try to achieve what you're here to learn about, what you're here to do. Anything you want to add, Reverend Rick, to the Incarnation Cross?
Just that you know, as we go through and start talking about these, people are going to start looking at these energies and say, oh, wow, that's a tough kind of combination of energies to have. And sometimes it can be and sometimes not. But the one thing that I would want everyone to keep in mind is no matter what these energies are, when we're talking about an incarnation cross, it is very profoundly felt by the individual, that kind of energy. But it is not an individual task, because we really are talking about a whole group of people born on the face of the planet, all around the planet, that share this cross. So it's an energy with a purpose that's shared by a larger group, even though it may feel like you're the only one participating in it. And I think sometimes that could be a comforting thought, you know, especially as we go through some of the things that we as people are going through currently. And, you know, as you mentioned, Peter, when we get into some of the details of the gates, there are some things going on around the world, even all around the world, as well as here in our home country of the United States, that are impacting how these energies get expressed. Or maybe better said, the way these energies are expressing themselves is displaying in the things that we see happening all around the world. And so I think for some people it may be a comfort to know you're not the only one feeling these energies. There's a lot of people out there sharing it with you. And for those of us who don't have these lead gates, that doesn't mean that we can't feel that energy either. Somebody who doesn't have those gates would be impacted by the transits of these energies on a day-to-day basis as we go through our lives. So that might be a bit cryptic, but I guess the main point there is your incarnation cross is an energy that you feel profoundly on your own, but you share it with many others across the face of the planet. So don't ever think that you're the only one having to go through it. There are other people who are doing it with you and who potentially, if you could hook up with them, might actually even help you in that purpose. What do you think, Peter?
I think that's very true, and I think that you know, one of the thoughts that came to mind is, you know, people are, you know, typically the incarnation crosses are in for a certain period, a couple of days. It depends on the cross and how the planets are moving, but you know, they're in for a couple of days, so that means that, you know, you may know somebody that was born on, you know, that has the same birthday as you, and so they're born on the same cross, and that means that they'll have this underlying foundation, this same push. But that doesn't mean and as you probably know, if you know somebody that's born on your birthday, it doesn't mean that they're going to act or be driven exactly the same as you, but they, you know, you will share something in common with them. And you know, people born under the cross of the Maya, like we're talking about today, are mostly going to be driven in some way to find out why. But what that why is could vary hugely. You know, and in my blog post, I alluded to the fact that, you know, we as humanity have been driven to, you know, to map the continents. We've been driven to map the different species. We've been driven to chart out the oceans. We've been driven into space. We're pushing ourselves to discover more and more about the universe, and that at the complete other end of the spectrum, we're diving more and more into the minuscule of ourselves, you know, the whole, you know, one of the things that just came to close in the last few years was the whole mapping of the, you know, the DNA project. So two people born on that same day could have that drive, and one is looking, you know, at images from the Hubble telescope way out to understand the universe, and the other one's looking at, you know, at the tiny increments of the DNA strand to understand that. So two, in some senses, very different expressions, but with a common theme underneath them.
And Peter, you bring up another good point as well, which is, you know, the cross doesn't have to be shared by just people with your same birthday, because as you said, they do many times span 2 or 3 days, depending on the cross. But not only that, there are many crosses that have multiple instances. So, you know, even if it's somebody who's not born on your same birthday, but maybe 3 months down the road, they may actually be born under the same cross as well, or 6 months down the road, you know, or 9 months. So, you know, these are energies that the lead gates change throughout the year, you know, even though it may end up being the same cross. They can actually come up at different points of the year. Not all of them do that, but a good many of them do. So there again, that would have another impact. There could be two people born under the cross of the Maya, but at two different parts of the year, and therefore, you know, those aspects would also play into how those energies get expressed in those individual people.
Absolutely. So, Reverend Rick, when I told you that we were going to be doing the cross of the Maya, you were excited, and I guess I'm curious, when you see this cross on somebody's chart, you know, what does that first start to suggest to you about them, about how that may play out in their design?
I'll admit to you, the reason I like this cross so much is because it carries an energy of mysticism to me. I don't mean mysticism in terms of prestidigitation. You know, I don't mean a Las Vegas show magician. I mean a mysticism that lies at the core or at the heart of our very existence. And you've alluded to that mysticism in terms of, you know, the need to know why, the drive to know why. But when you look at it in combination with the other gates, it becomes much more than just wanting to know why. It becomes more a need to know why, so that we can continue to improve, to grow, and to progress. And it's kind of like, I see it as kind of like one of those pinwheels, you know, that has the black and white curves drawn on it that they use for hypnotizing people. But instead of swirling inward, it's swirling outward. You know, I see it as an energy that starts from the inside and radiates outward, you know, to try to basically take in, you know, reach out and grab everything it can to know all of it, to experience it, to call it, you know, to call it by name, and to know that it's safe to go out there into that environment, into that world, and essentially make it your own. So there's a lot of different things that play into it, but it's always just such a fascinating journey when you look at these kinds of energies and the way they play with each other. I guess that's why I like this cross so much.
Well, it is a very interesting energy, and one of the things that I think is neat is it really does, you know, it really does drive our evolution in humankind, and as you said, not necessarily because just answering why or finding an answer for why, but finding that answer and then connecting it back to how is that going to benefit our continuity or not.
Exactly.
So, Reverend Rick, would you like to start and take a look at one of these four gates?
Sure. Let's see. Shall we start with the unaware drive, or with the aware drive, the aware presence? aware energy?
It's a pinwheel. Pick your pick your leaf. Actually, I don't know what are those called on a pinwheel. They're pins at the end, but what's the part that catches the wind?
Blades, I guess.
Blades. That's probably a good one.
So I'll start with the lead gate in the personality. How's that? The sun gate in the personality, in this case for the cross of the Maya, it's gate 42. And gate 42 can be found on the bottom of the sacral center. And if you have the sacral center defined in your chart, it's the red square down towards the bottom of the graphic. Gate 42 is the bottom left gate. Coming out of that center, pointing towards the root center. And gate 42 is known as the gate of growth. And Peter, as you mentioned in your blog post, this is a gate that shows, and I'm going to read from here, the maturity of a project or process to set the groundwork for the next cycle. And so it's not just about moving through a project or process. It's not just about growing. It's about reaching the final step. It's about getting to the end of one process so that you can allow for and prepare for the beginning of the next process or next cycle. Oh, excuse me. So with this kind of energy, there's a very much a focus on one thing at a time. You know, people with this kind of energy like to you know, spend their time working with a specific thing or project or aspect of a project in order to complete that and get that, or at least get that to a point close to completion. In order to be able to get to the next steps. There is another aspect of this, however, and that is that this is an energy that's part of an abstract process. So there really isn't somebody who is looking at another that has this gate wouldn't necessarily see any kind of rhyme or reason. There isn't necessarily a logical progression to what they're doing. But through their own abstract nature, they somehow know what it is they need to do in order to move this current activity towards its completion, knowing that when it does complete, it will be, you know, they will be ready for the next part of the process or for the next activity to begin. and I'm going to stop there. Peter, anything you want to add to that?
Well, just in terms of the president that we're using the example of that was born under this cross, you know, it very much stands out that, you know, this energy stood forward and, you know, it was his lead energy for his version of this incarnation cross. The Lewis and Clark expedition was a very key thing that he was focused on. He had a house that's somewhat famous in Monticello. And in later in his, I think it started, I'm not sure when it started, whether it was during his presidency or before or shortly after, but, you know, that became a very big central focus for him. And likewise, before he became president, he was, much to the chagrin of President, or this was even before John Adams was president, but much to the chagrin of Adams, Jefferson was a big supporter of the French revolutionaries. And Adams was actually in France trying to garner the support of the ruling party in France, and Jefferson sort of not so behind the scenes, it's somewhat publicly, was supporting the revolutionaries, but he, for quite a while he was very focused on that. So again, I think sort of pulling out a couple of threads here, key elements that he was focused, parts of the cycle, trying to see those cycles through. Obviously with the, you know, the French revolutionaries, there was a, he felt a parallel vibe with the revolution that the United States went through. And, you know, basically with that focus, trying to see it through to completion so that the next phase of development or the next phase for continuity could continue.
And just to add to that, you know, it's no wonder that Jefferson was involved in the things that he was involved in terms of the American Revolution and then the French compassion for the French Revolution. If we look at his personality gate in Mars, it is the gate of revolution. You know, the gate of needing to make sure that the proper principles are being upheld. Going back to the sacral center, he has the channel. He has a channel connecting the sacral to the root, which is the 952, and that's all about focus and concentration. And I'm not sure that a lot of people recognize this about Thomas Jefferson, but not only was he a prolific writer, but he was an experimenter. You know, he created all kinds of neat and wonderful gadgets and gizmos and things, just like Ben Franklin. And his house in Monticello, out in Virginia, if anybody ever gets a chance to go down to see that, I would highly recommend it. It's full. They do tours of the house, and there's all kinds of things that he did, that he implemented in the design of his house to make the workflow of the servants in the house easier. If I'm not mistaken, I think he was one of the first people to implement the dumbwaiter in the design of a home in order to move things from the kitchens below up to the serving, you know, the dining room in the upper levels. So there's a lot of stuff there. So he has that ability to focus and concentrate on the elements that he needs to focus and concentrate on in order to complete them and be able to move on to the next piece, if you will, of the journey for him, whatever that happens to be.
Who are you calling a dumb waiter?
That must have been me. I didn't make it to wait staff. All I could do was clear the...
Yeah.
I was just the busser.
Yeah, I watch some of these waiters carry, you know, multiple plates, and I'm athletic, but I don't think I could do that. Quite have that balance there. So let's look at another gate here that's part of this cross, and we'll stay in the personality side, at least Jefferson's version. And we'll look at the gate 32. Again, if you're joining us, we're looking at some charts on loveyourhumandesign.com. On the right-hand side, click on Peter's blog, and then click on the article titled Incarnation Cross of the Maya. So we're now looking at the second gate we're looking at here is gate 32. And gate 32 is off the root center. I mean, I'm sorry, it's off the spleen going down towards the root center. And in Thomas Jefferson's chart there on the blog post, it's circled in red. And in gate 32 is a gate of continuity. It's a gate of survival. It's energy that's looking at what has gone on in the past. But in a way, it's taking that past information and looking at the present almost with an eye for the future. or well, I'd say with an eye for the future, not necessarily not in the planning sense, but with the hey, if I see everybody else doing this a different way, or if I see a bunch of people doing it a different way and it works, then I'm gonna change. I'm gonna modify my behavior and change. So again, as you know, we were talking about the revolution, both for the United States and for France. You know, this is an energy that Thomas Jefferson had that is also carried in the cross. That's going to be looking at, hey, if that's a better way and they're not getting their heads chopped off, then, you know, that's the way we should do it. Because that way is going to provide more stability than the current way. Reverend Rick?
I would even add to that that part of that continuity is maintaining, you know, the continuity, I guess, could be a conceptualized as maintaining one's basic nature. And so this carries with it an ability to adapt to the environment, to the situation, and to say, well, you know, this is how I am. And if I want to maintain that, if I want to be, you know, speaking of revolution, you know, let's say you survive the revolution and you're going to be a, you know, a member of that new society, you know, you need to adapt in order to maintain who you are. You need to work with the new regime, so to speak. So this is a continuity of one's own being. As well, and being on the spleen center, of course, it also carries that drive to for self-preservation, and so there again we have that energy of adaptation in order to survive and to continue. So, if that makes any sense,
it does, and you make a good point there, because if you look at the revolution in the United States, it's not like they, you know, it's not like they revolted and then the government and the cities and everything they did was completely brand new. In fact, you know, there's a lot of parallelism in New England with England, you know, which is where, for the most part, a lot of the revolution took place. So it's not like they chucked it and just went with a whole brand new design. They really kind of chucked it and just tweaked it. And,
yeah,
you know, a lot of that was around government, you know, in terms of not being a monarchy.
Right. They adapted, actually, as a matter of fact, they adapted the Roman structure of government, you know, with the republic, you know, when the United States was created, they created it as a republic based loosely on ancient Rome.
Mm-hmm. So it definitely had this feat in the past, but, you know, making tweaks or bringing together a few models, you know, I guess in a way like human design.
Yep. Knowing what and how to adapt to you know, for survivability, basically.
And I guess one last piece I'd add is that this energy has you know, it really goes along with your comment about, you know, using that as the Greek as a model, because, you know, there is a real element of history in this gate. This gate actually within the body processes, within the defense system, is the memory of the defense or the immune system. And so there is this holding on to history aspect and memory aspect. And you know, actually, if you if you look at Monticello in his house, there were architecture designs that he he really brought in from the I guess those are the Roman columns out front. Would those, would you characterize those as Roman columns?
I think so. I think he was enthralled with ancient architecture, I'll put it that way.
Yep. So, again, that bit of history being brought forward to produce a modern structure, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about taking us through one of the unconscious gates of the design of this cross, or this version of this cross?
All righty. I'll start at the top with the sun, and for Thomas Jefferson. And by the way, I guess we should probably say a belated happy birthday to him, eh?
Yeah.
His birthday just happened to be yesterday. So I don't know how old he would be, but he'd be pretty old by now. I don't think anybody would ever argue the fact that Thomas Jefferson was clearly a deep thinker. You know, I mean, he spent a lot of time thinking about things, writing about things, organizing his thoughts, coming back to different elements and rethinking about them. And it's no wonder, when we look at his chart, it's no wonder that he does that. He has that channel between the head and the ajna, the two top triangles, one pointing up, one pointing down. The channel in the middle connecting them, he's got that whole channel filled in there. And that energy is all about the deep individual knowingness behind the thoughts. You know, thinking about things over and over and over again until you reach that aha moment of clarity that says, now I get it. Now I know. And when we look at the individual gates there, gate 61, the one up in the head, that's the triangle at the very top of the graphic, that's the gate that he has in his unaware energy of the sun, known as the design gate, and some people call it the unconscious energy of, activated by the sun. Gate 61, we call that the gate of mystery. You know, and here lies, you know, that deep need for wanting to know. The head center is a pressure center. There's two pressure centers in the human design system, and they're both at the top and at the bottom. One is the head and one is the root. And this gate 61 is in the head. So there's a pressure here to not just think about things, but to really go deep and really know. And it's a knowing of the unknown, a knowing of the unknowable. He sent Lewis and Clark out there, and he said, bring me back all the information you can. I want to know. This is part of that energy of asking the question why and getting an answer, you know, that you were talking about earlier, Peter. And it's very much, I don't want to get all woo on you here, but it's very much a very spiritual energy, because it is all about the individual knowingness. It's the aha moment of clarity that the individual gets that may or may not be shared by others. And for Jefferson, you know, that really came to light, I think, for him in a lot of the writing that he did. Now, he's one of the fathers of the Declaration of Independence, and one of the writers, I should say. And, you know, as much writing as he did, I don't think he ever went with anything he wrote the first time around. I think there were always multiple drafts of what he did, because of this kind of energy, in terms of going back over it and going back over it and going back over it until he gets to a point where he absolutely knows this is it. This is the final draft. This is what I wanted to convey. Because part of this knowingness, part of this individual, unique, spiritual knowingness is the desire to get that knowingness out the desire to share that knowingness, the desire to share your knowledge with others. And depending on your type, you know, there are appropriate ways of doing that and not so appropriate ways of doing that. But at any rate, so this is the, you know, this is that unaware energy that kind of drives the thought processes, I guess, in the cross of the Maya. It's the need to know, and it kind of gets coupled with the other gate that Peter will be talking about. But before he does that, any other thoughts on this particular gate?
Well, Justin, it's a good point that this is very individual knowing that we're talking about, and in a couple of books that I've read about Jefferson, there were some things that he did and some things that he talked about that people found odd. he is portrayed in some circles as a bit of an odd man. Certainly a very wise man, and very, he was responsible for the Louisiana Purchase. And to refresh your memory, that was basically the acquisition from France of Louisiana all the way up almost the whole section of the Midwest. So very future looking here. But he was cited as being a bit odd, and I think part of that was this individual expression that comes out of his understanding, because it's individual, people don't always get it. It's unique to him, and and when they really get it, it's very appreciated. When you don't get it, then it seems a bit odd, because you can't really understand it. And I think, with the whole Lewis and Clark thing, there were some people that questioned that and questioned the amount of money. I mean, it wasn't just Lewis. If you don't know anything about Lewis and Clark, it wasn't just Lewis and Clark. I think they had the core group was 21 men, but then they had all sorts of help along the way, and they had to compensate some of the Native Americans, help them at certain points, they had lots of supplies, and so there was just all kinds of people that helped them on that journey, and people questioned, is this valid to be spending all this money on just trying to find a route west? So that again is that individual. It was, kind of an individual vision that he had, some people really got it, and some people didn't.
And here we are over 200 years later, and we're still questioning whether or not the government's spending the money wisely.
That's true. That's true. Wasn't the first, and it won't be the last.
So, Peter, do you want to take us through that last gate then?
Sure. The last gate is gate 62. It is off of the throat. It's in the logical circuit. It's off the throat, going up towards the ajna, on the top left there. And it's often known as it's the gate of detail, often known as the small details. And really, what this is about is putting a name, and I'm using that word name loosely, but sort of pinning down a concept, a thing, you know, in the case of Lewis and Clark, a plant, a bird, but putting a name and a description on it so we can discuss it, we can analyze it. And, you know, it's really about getting a grasp of the concept or the thing so that then we can further know it. Because without, you know, if today we were talking about this incarnation cross of the thing, we'd have a hard time getting anywhere with that. You know, because you'd be like, well, what thing? It's like, well, you know, the thing. You know, the thing with gates 61, 42, 32, and 62. And even then, as we're introducing what the gates are, now we're starting to put some description on it. But what helps us further is to call it the cross of the Maya. And so now, you know, that right there is really a representation of gate 62. Okay, now we have the cross of the Maya. We can talk about it. It's a concept. You know, it's a cross, but it's also a concept now. And what does this concept hold? Well, it holds the energy of the four gates we're talking about. And, you know, a lot of what we've talked about here today is oriented around gate 62. As Reverend Rick was saying, well, it happens four times a year. So each layer we add, each layer of small details, potentially can enable us to talk about this in a deeper way, to get more understanding of the what or the why or the how.
And ultimately, this gate 62 being on the throat is a gate of communication. So those answers, the details, the names that are given, the thoughts that are needing to be expressed, the cycles that we need to go through in order to maintain our survivability and our you know, adapting to ensure that survivability and that continuity, all of this needs to be communicated. Remember, we said at the beginning, it's an energy that may be profoundly felt by the individual, but it's shared by many people across the planet. And so this energy finds a way to get itself communicated, and it does so primarily through that gate 62, which then starts to share, you know, all the knowledge and experiences and insights that have come to it.
And it's a collective energy, and Reverend Rick, you make a great point that it's bringing that into expression so that we as a collective can operate on that, whether it's further discussion or analysis or agreement that, you know, that we've reached the end of the cycle of understanding. And we all agree.
Yep.
Now, I just happened to be glancing at Richard Rudd's book, The Gene Keys, on this gate, and he had, I wanted to share this. He had a title. The shadow side of this gate is the stupidity of being clever. And, you know, I think what he's trying to get at here is that we can be so clever in our delving into the details and identification that we can lose track of what we were talking about in the first place. And, so I just wanted to share that because, you know, again, this gets at how things are expressed. And you could have somebody that is the cross of the Maya that's living out more of the shadow side, and they're so into naming things or identification that you could completely get lost in what you were trying to figure out, the why or the how or the what that you were trying to figure out in the first place.
Yep. And just for this particular gate 62, you mentioned earlier, Peter, that sometimes it's known as the gate of the small detail. And I just wanted to mention that from the I Ching, remember all 64 gates of human design come from a foundation in the I Ching. And the name of this gate in the I Ching is known as the preponderance of the small. So, which just adds another layer to that whole thing you just read about Richard Rudd. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like that, the stupidity of being clever. That's cute.
So I think as you can see, you know, as we've gone through the gates, you have, you know, each gate that we dove into, they have their own characteristics, they have their own quality, but as you piece these all together, you know, it really comes up with a common theme that is about understanding the why, so that we can have continuity and we can have growth and potentially modify or take steps to modify that continuity so that growth, you know, it sort of goes on around in circles. In a way, this, you know, as Reverend Rick was saying, you know, this cross is like a pinwheel with each of these gates being a blade, and sort of chasing around, creating evolution.
And just to throw something else out there too, part of what you just said with these energies coming together, I'm going to add to that an element of documenting. You know, i.e. naming or communicating the information for future generations in order to maintain that continuity throughout history. So as you mentioned, there's a bit of a historical perspective associated with this energy as well, and that's one of the reasons why, is because all of this gets communicated, but not just in the moment. It gets communicated for time. It gets communicated for posterity, you know, for future generations, so that they can continue to grow and prosper.
And, you know, as you pointed that out, that really made me think that, you know, this is another way you can look at how different iterations of this cross may be tilted. And that some people on this cross are going to be more of the why askers or why seekers. And some are going to be more oriented towards that documentation. So maybe being a librarian, archivist, that kind of thing. Some are going to be more in tune with the continuity and making sure we're maintaining or making sure that we're ready to make that revolution or that next step when it's time. And some will be more oriented towards making sure we're always completing that growth, you know, finishing it off. Because a lot of times if we get ahead of ourselves and we try to take that next step before we've put that last step down, then things don't go so well. Walking and chewing gum, I think, comes to mind for me.
Yep. I just got an image of walking in front of a cannon as somebody's lighting the fuse and somebody else writing down, "Never do this." Trust me on this one.
So, Reverend Rick, just for fun, do you want to, last few minutes here, do you want to take a look at Thomas Jefferson's chart and point out anything else that you see in his design that people may find interesting?
Sure, actually. One of the things that really strikes me is the number of 3 and 6 line activations all over his chart, all over his gates. He was definitely somebody who was prone to trying and trying and trying and trying and trying and continuing to try, as well as watching others try and putting those two energies together into something that really works. And if we look at the, you know, he's got a split definition where he's got the, you know, the those four energy centers at the towards the bottom of his chart grouped together, and he's got the head and the ajna grouped together. And one of the things that struck me was just kind of the configuration of the bottom ones. I mentioned from the sacral to the root, he's got the 952 there for focus and concentration. But then he's also got the 3828 from the root to the spleen, which is all about the struggle. And then he's got the 44 to the 26 from the spleen to the will center, which is all about, you know, and endeavoring and you know, entrepreneurship and acquiring, you know, the things needed by the tribe in order to survive. And so I'm struck by hang on just a sec. I'm struck by the connections here. So, you know, to me it creates a story of
Rick, we seem to have lost you. We've lost the story. Well, while Rick is trying to make his way back, I see him on the phone line, but he doesn't seem to be able to speak to us at the moment. Just in going along with what he was saying, in Jefferson's chart, he has the gate 37, which is all about being part of the family. And as Reverend Rick pointed out, he has the gate 49. These are off of the solar plexus. There's three gates here that I'm pointing out. And so he has the gate 37, which is part of the family, and wanting to be part of the family. And so he with this energy, he'd be very driven to be part of the family or the group, or in this case, the founding fathers. He has the gate 49 for revolution. So if it's not working, he's going to have the energy to change it. And he also has the gate 55 off of the solar plexus right next to the gate 49 there, which is the gate of spirit, or abundance of spirit. So it's having that emotional passion for the effort, for the breaking free, having that emotional spirit for the adventure that he launched Lewis and Clark onto. So all of those going together to be part of his energies with this cross of Maya that we've been talking about, and with those two channels that Reverend Rick was pointing out, driving that need to find and make sure it's provided for the path of betterment, the path of continuity with that next step of evolution. And Reverend Rick, I think you're back now.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Oh, cool. Wonderful. Sorry about that. Somehow or other, I got disconnected. But Peter, you did a wonderful job of summing up what I was going to say, so thank you.
You're welcome. And your other phone line is still out there, so on my switchboard, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But
oh, wow. That's kind of weird because I only have the one.
I guess it's When does Mercury go direct? Because it's been getting a lot of Mercury retrograde.
It's been retrograde for a long time.
We had some funny instances yesterday with technology that I have to write a story about them. They were just so bizarre. But
yeah. So, Peter, I wanted to mention a couple of things about the Incarnation Cross, this one in particular, and I guess all Incarnation Crosses in general, if I may, but I don't want to
leave
that while we're talking about Jefferson's chart specifically.
No, I think we're done with that, so please do.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that, we're talking about the Cross of the Maya, and we're looking at the four lead gates, and Thomas Jefferson is our sample chart here today. He's giving us his chart to work from. But I wanted to mention that even though this cross appears four different times throughout the year, and the gates that we're talking about may change their order, it's important for people to understand that just because you have gate 42 or gate 32 in your personality, that does not necessarily mean that you are the gate of the Maya. It's a combination of all four of these gates that are the gate of the Maya. And the only reason I bring that out is because we actually today are in an incarnation cross that does have the 42 and the 32 in the conscious sun and earth, the personality sun and earth. However, we have now gone into the fourth line energies known as the juxtaposition cross. And so the design gates, or the unaware energies, or what shows up in red, change to a different pair of gates, and I'm not going to get into what they are. I just wanted to mention that it's important for people to understand that your incarnation cross is based on all four of those gates together. And as those gates change, as the sun and the earth progress through those gates and whatever the next gates happen to be, it changes the cross that you're born into. And in one particular day, we could actually go through two, maybe three different crosses, depending on when they come into play on that day. So going back to something we had mentioned earlier, Peter, just because somebody shares your same birthday doesn't necessarily mean that they will have the same cross as you, although there will be certain energies that that will end up being the same.
Exactly, and you will, we talked about the 42 and 32. So you will have that in common in terms of being part of your energy, but it's going to make a little bit, as you saw today, the cross of the Maya, all four of those energies blended together to create a concept or create a, create some sort of foundation. And with those two new gates in the example that Reverend Rick gave, it's going to form something slightly different or very different depending on the combinations.
Yep.
So, Reverend Rick, do you have anything coming up this week?
I don't. Well, actually, not until next Wednesday. But on next Wednesday, and help me out, Peter, what's the date next Wednesday?
That would be the 20th.
The 20th.
April 20th.
Right. So next Wednesday on the 20th, I'll be hosting one of my human design classes Wednesday evening. You can sign up for it from the website, reverick.webs.com. Just click on the link for human design. And from there, you'll see a couple of different options there, what's new and services. Both of them will get you to the same, will get you to the right information. And other than that, anyone who's going to be in the Springfield area of Virginia this weekend, I will be going to a Reiki share. We're teaching a Reiki 1 class Saturday night and Sunday morning. And we are going to follow all that up with a Reiki share Sunday afternoon. So although this really is only for the local people around here, I just want to put it out there. If you go to meetup.com and look for the Springfield, Virginia group called My Reiki Path, you can sign up for the Reiki share there. All are welcome. It's a free event, and we host it once a month. So come on down, anyone who's going to be in the area.
Sounds like a wonderful event.
We have a
couple events coming up. Next Thursday, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to be talking about the Incarnation Cross of Laws, energy that's going to be in next week. Not on Thursday, but on Tuesday. I think it's coming in actually this weekend until it goes through Tuesday. The Cross of Laws, if you know somebody that's the Cross of Laws, you'll really recognize when we talk about it. It's these are people that are the law. They lay down the law. They have policies or rules and stick to them. That's a good thing, but it can be in personal situations. It can be an exercise to negotiate with these people. But there's a real solid purpose behind it that we will we'll be talking about next week. So that's next Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and on Tuesday, on the Spiritual Help Desk at 1 p.m. Eastern, I guess in line with the Cross of the Maya, we're going to have the mystery show. I have had a couple of potential people lined up and nothing confirmed, so it should be interesting. I'm trusting Spirit will provide what we need to discuss on Tuesday.
Absolutely. It'll be, in the words of a bear of very little brain that's near and dear to my heart, it will be a grand adventure.
So we hope you join us either Tuesday or Thursday or both, and hope you join Reverend Rick if you're in Virginia this weekend and next Wednesday for his human design discussions. Well, that's all I have, Reverend Rick. Anything in closing?
Nope, that'll do it. Happy birthday, Tom. We're glad to have you and glad to have had you here. And I guess we'll just see you all next week, everyone. Take care.
So I think he's 268, if I figured that out right.
268. Wow.
Yeah.
And looks just like he does on the money.
That's right. Well, thank you all for being here, and until next week, this has been Human Design On Air.